Come back. Happy, happy hour. President Bartlett is here. Okay, everybody just calm down.
God.
Oh, my God.
We have a real American
Martin
leader.
Sheen is in my house for the happy hour. Hello, Martin.
Hello, Stephanie. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
See how calm I am suddenly? Like, Martin Sheen's just in my house every day.
You were screaming all morning.
I just come down. Oh, look, Martin Sheen. I said this on the air. I had the most life-changing 45-minute conversation with you on the phone that I've ever had. You are everything that everyone I know that knows you says you are. You are brilliant. You are kind. You are amazing. In addition to being an amazing actor, it is just... it's a little overwhelming.
Well, it takes one to know one. But 45 minutes on the phone, well, you discovered what a windbag I am besides all the other things right. You said.
Well, your lovely wife, Janet, sent me these T-shirts. Trump grabbed my country, spelled the way I like it, C-U-N-T-R-Y.
You can say that on air.
Janet couldn't. I was very bereft. She could not make it. And she said, FYI, Martin's kind of a prude. I have to say all the fucks for us. So I will try to... keep it to a minimum.
You just made him blush.
Listen, we are Catholic school comrades. We know.
Okay.
Your wife made these fake grids. I ran into you. It's a whole thing. She's fantastic.
She is, and I'm glad she still puts up with me after 57 years.
57 years?
What else is she going to do?
Oh, my God. She has options, Martin.
Her.
She has options.
Honest to God, she said, please don't talk about me. I said, and I went out, I danced down the driveway singing, please don't talk about me when I'm gone. And I promised her I wouldn't. So there you have it.
Anyway, she's fantastic. And I don't even know where to start because Janet, don't bring up Janet again, Travis. What did he say?
Damn it, Janet.
It's private. It's family. Damn it, Janet. He loves her. All right. How many times have you heard in the Trump administration, oh, my God, I wish you were really president? I mean, obviously, you have this incredible body of work. But obviously, the West Wing at this particular point, as Bradley Whitford told me, it's progressive porn.
That's so Bradley. Oh,
right.
God love him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was really the best of times, and now we're in the worst of times. So at least we have something to compare it to. But ours was
point that it's the winner of our discontent and Mueller's going to get his ass in the spring? Because I hope that's what you meant.
Well, you know the guy that wrote this book that everyone is interested in about the guy with the bird's nest on his head?
Michael Wolff, Fire and Fury.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't have the bird nest. It's the other guy.
Right.
But said that he felt, and everybody around him feels, that he's going to hit a wall.
Yeah.
And each time they think that this is it, you know, brace yourself. So he somehow skirts around it or goes under or over it, and he survives it. But there will be a wall.
Yeah,
and,
I believe
and,
so,
yeah,
too.
And I think that everybody is kind of anticipating that it will be Mueller.
Yeah.
That he's not going to get past Mueller.
Martin, we talked on the phone. I mean, it's hard to, there's so much. And I remember being at a Get Out of Iraq rally in downtown LA and watching you speak. And my co-host Jim and I both said, God, why couldn't he really be president? And that was in the good old days of George W. Bush. Now we're just like, oh, please, President Bartlett, Jesus. It is hard to, I was saying this, that I think Mueller, you know, as a lifelong Republican, maybe could have conceived of a Trump, but he couldn't conceive of an entire Republican Party that is complicit in this, that is trying to cover for
him. No one could possibly imagine this. What kind of deals they've made with what devil for how long is just completely baffling.
Yeah.
It just does not make any sense at all. That they have to face up to this someday. They're going to have to answer for what they did and what they did not do during this administration.
We talked on the phone about my dad and Goldwater, but one of the things that you have in common is my dad was deeply Catholic.
Yeah. And I didn't know that until I talked to you.
He kept it a
big secret, you know, even after, you know, Kennedy is the first Catholic to win the White House.
So,
I had no idea he was Catholic.
Yeah. But, you know, what's interesting is, you know, it's so different in that day. You know, I knew he was really religious. He never talked about it. He didn't talk about it in public.
Yeah.
He didn't use it. I mean, you must be, because you really, I mean, you really follow the teachings of Jesus. Like, the stuff that you do is everything that Jesus said, and this Republican Party is, you know, what can you say about it?
Well, you know, my dear friend and inspiration, Dan Berrigan, Father Dan Berrigan, who left us last year,
yeah,
God rest him, was a great inspiration to all of us in the peace movement. And, you know, he once said that we have to live according to our conscience as if the gospel was true.
Yeah.
That we take it literally, and most important, we take it personally. Because if the message in the gospel to serve is not personal, then it's impersonal. And if anything is impersonal, you have to question its value.
Yeah,
it has to cost you something. Anything worthwhile has got to cost you something.
Right.
Otherwise, you're left to question its value.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the Stations of the Cross. You do that every Easter?
With the Catholic Worker downtown.
Yes. And
on Good Friday at 3 o'clock every day, we assemble.
I did rush hour traffic at 3 o'clock for you, Martin Sheen. But, yeah. I mean, I just, how did this party become the party of God, the party of family values, of Christian values, particularly with Donald Trump? Forget where they were before. You know, I mean, Barry Goldwater used to speak out, right? Remember, he used to say, like, every good Christian ought to kick Jerry Falwell right in the ass.
Yeah. He was for real, you know. At the time, he seemed so, you know, extreme, and that phrase that he uttered at the convention that nominated him, you know.
Yeah.
Was kind of stuck with him, but I don't think he meant it in that way. And the infamous ad that Johnson used on television with the child pulling the
daisy
flowers off the daisy down to countdown to a nuclear explosion. It was certainly not fair to anybody.
Yeah, well, Martin, if my dad said anything at the dinner table over and over, it was, "I wish I could blow up more little girls with nuclear bombs."
Of course you did. Why, I ought to.
It's like, "Oh, Dad, that again. Pass the gravy."
You know, he was the same guy that went down to the White House and said to Dick Nixon, "I think it's time to go.
Time for you to go."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. My dad was a prosecutor at Nuremberg. I mean, I've missed my dad now for many years, since 83. Yeah. And so I can't speak for what he'd think. I just can't imagine what he or Barry Goldwater would think of this Republican
Party. Or any of the Republicans of their day, you know. So many wonderful men and women in the Republican Party, you know, including the first woman in the Senate from Maine. And that wonderful guy from Illinois, Everett Dirksen. Pierce, what's his name? Whose lad was kidnapped. But these were good and decent people who had a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
The last time we saw that was John McCain taking the microphone away from that lady and saying, no, he's a patriotic American. We just differ on some issues.
Right, yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah,
and that was the last time that a Republican stood up for a principle.
Yeah,
at least publicly.
I love how many times people have said you should run for office, and you're like, "Oh no, I'm not qualified."
I'm
rethinking. Have you rethought that?
I think the whole country
I'm just
is
just an actor. Yeah, I know.
I think the good thing about the current administration is that, they really make you believe that anyone could become president.
Really,
literally,
anything. Anything in America is possible with Russia's help.
with a little bit of help from our Soviet friends,
You quoted President Bartlett. You said more than any time in recent history, America's destiny is not of our own choosing. Yet the true measure of a people's strength is how they rise to master the moment when it does arrive. You concluded by saying, "One heart with courage is a majority." I think we need to be reminded of that, particularly today.
Yeah, that's a Bobby Kennedy quote.
Incidentally.
Yeah. He said one man with courage is a majority, and Ethel gave me permission to change it to heart.
I played Bananagram with Ethel Kennedy, so don't try to out-name drop me, Martin Sheen.
Sorry about that.
Listen,
I happen to adore her.
I adore her, too. I accidentally stepped on her foot while we were playing Bananagram.
Oh, dear.
Well, you know if you show up at the
Kennedy
compound.
The injured one. The right foot. Oh, dear.
Well, she has a table that spins with the Limburger cheese and the stuff on it, and you show up at 6 o'clock to watch the news with her, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
At the Oh, my God, you played John Kennedy. There's so much to talk about. We need like 7 hours. So you show up to watch the news with her, because that's what you do.
Yeah.
And then you
play, or you watch her watch
and
the
she's
news.
Like a nun with Bananagram. She's like, that's not a word.
One time, we were having dinner at Hyannisport with she and her family, and I said, have you heard this new quote from Richard Rohr? Oh, no, what is that? You know, he's the Franciscan.
Yeah.
And I said, he says that we don't go to heaven. We become heaven. Oh, no, she says, I have no intention of that. No, I'm going straight to heaven. I don't want to hear any of that nonsense.
Wow, we're so far from Camelot. You were in a fundraising email. You said you're disgusted by Trump, obviously, like most of us are. You said, my time playing the president on the West Wing taught me what Washington should be like, and right now with the Republicans in control, it's far from what we as Americans deserve.
I may be changing my mind about that. Maybe we do deserve it.
Maybe this is
it's really our own fault, you know.
There's kids eating Tide Pods now, Martin. Maybe we really are this dumb. Yeah. You said disgusted not only by Trump, but by the Republicans kowtowing to their rich special interests instead of representing the American people. Most disgusted by the Republican effort to gut health care, social programs for Americans in need. You had dubbed Trump an empty-headed moron, which is kinder than most of his cabinet. But absolutely nothing to offer us.
How dare you call me empty-headed?
I mean, did you even imagine it would be this bad?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah,
I did.
I think we all did.
I said that. I said, as bad as you think it's going to be, it's going to be worse.
Yeah.
It's going to be worse.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you imagine? I mean, what does it feel like to watch? I mean, obviously, we're going to get to your whole incredible career, but it is just the polar opposite of the West Wing. Someone with completely without knowledge, without temperament, without any preparation for this office at all, and we're seeing the result.
Yeah, well, I think that this book we mentioned earlier, Michael Wolff's book, really went right to the center of things in the beginning, saying that they had no idea they were going to win. They were prepared to lose, and it was going to be part of
and
their
make money off
history.
It.
Yeah.
Trump TV. Whatever.
Exactly. They were going forward with, boy, didn't we give them a fight. And now look at them. Boy, I bet they wish they had us now. You know, that was, and I had some thoughts about him resigning very early before he actually got in there.
Me too.
Realizing, what have I done? Oh, God, what have I done? How do I get out of this? Very simply, Mr. President-elect, you don't take the oath of office.
Air quotes, Mr. Air quotes President.
Oh, God have mercy.
Yeah, I mean, there's this whole article. I mean, obviously, you know, there's been all this talk about West Wing coming back, about Aaron Sorkin doing it again, because, like, oh, my God, we need this more than ever. But I love this, how Donald Trump has blown the White House drama out of the water. As a character, he's too gross and too incredible to be pitched to TV. This is why comedy has been most able to take advantage of this year. Aaron Sorkin, when asked about the U.S. predicament, said, our darkest days are always followed by our finest hours. In these articles as well, you hope so, but it's quite possible Trump has debased the presidency in such a way it may never recover. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really all dependent on how long he stays and how much clear damage we can see that needs to be repaired. I'm looking at the front page of the Times, the Los Angeles Times this morning, and one of the top stories is the EPA has collapsed.
Yeah.
And they've just given the fossil fuel industry carte blanche again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just disgraceful what they're doing. And now all the lands here in the West, you know, are up for grabs. The oceans, you know, the offshore drilling is coming back unless you're, you must live in a state that Trump likes to play golf in, why they'll consider not to.
How many times have you been arrested? 70 something?
Almost. I was hoping to reach it. I used to keep, the only way I kept, and I'm not, it feels like I'm bragging. The only way I kept track of it is with my birthday. I got arrested up till my 68th birthday. So yeah. It's 68. But I've been very lazy and complacent these past 9 years. So sorry about that.
Like Barbara Bush saying, no more of the parachuting to George H. Sonny, no more of the, no, we're out of bail money.
All right.
We were hoping for another DUI tonight, but you're not drinking.
These arrested. No, I was talking about social justice.
I know.
The others are quite separate.
It was a joke.
They're good arrests.
What I was saying, this administration just must be making your head explode every day, because every issue you've cared about and been passionate about and done activism for, they're horrible on every issue every day. Like, I'm getting PTSD from my phone alerts. I'm like, what did I just do now?
Yeah, there was a line in a Marlon Brando movie where he said, "Well, what are you rebelling against?" And he said, "What do you got?"
I don't even know where to start with you. First of all, how lucky are we to get you? This is going to drop the day the fourth season of Grace and Frankie drops, which with my good friend Lily Tomlin, who one of the many people that speaks of you in, I don't just got godlike terms.
Yeah, but she won't let me open for her.
You told me this.
Yeah, I've given her any number of opportunities. And, you know, in Grace and Frankie, my character has become a kind of a star in neighborhood
theater. Yes.
And we've been doing musicals. And right. So every now and then I sing outside her makeup trailer. And she just closes the door and slams the window, and she won't hear of it. And so maybe you could put in a word for me. You know, I've done everything.
I certainly will, Mark.
But I'm telling her that if my character really comes to fruition and I'm appreciated for my musical comedy skills, I think she may be wanting to open for me before too long. So let that sit there for a little while.
Just stew on that, Lily. Listen, I think right before the Women's March, when this also drops and is the year of the woman and Me Too, Martin, I'm just saying, I think that...
the world will be saved by women.
You said to me, this is really the girls' show. Like, is, you know, yeah. Sam and I just sit there and they're like, the girls are ready for you.
Well, we're kind of the bench guys. You know, we go in when the girls get a little tired, you know. It's true. And, you know, they... I've had early calls, but my God, I've been there, you know, when they've already, I've been there at 7 o'clock and they've been there since 5, you know. They are absolutely devoted and disciplined. And
the show is fantastic. I love it. It is fantastic.
I love doing it. And yeah. I adore those wonderful dames. And I say dames from all the love I can muster for them. They really are great, great dames.
Yeah.
And I adore them.
You said something a little bit non-politically correct when the show launched. You're like, who's going to want to have sex with Sam Waterston when you can have sex with Jane Fonda?
Janet told me to keep my trap shut, you know. I said, well, maybe there's a chance I could get, you know, talk to the writers that I could get back with Jane.
Just for a little while. A trial, you know. She looks amazing,
doesn't
right?
she?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she and Lily, just beautiful. Yeah. I mean.
Great people. We just spend all day laughing with and to each other, and it's just a joy to do the show.
Yeah. And all noted liberals, you must have some. You must talk some shit off
the
stage
behind the scenes there.
About your phone alerts.
It is something. And the kids, you know, June and Brooklyn and all the others. I'm so embarrassed I can't remember folks' names, but I know them when I see them.
They're my children
in the show. And of course, we just all are enjoying what we're doing, and it's very obvious. And they've begun to really kind of, the writers have begun to really write for us.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways that we couldn't have considered.
I mean, it's such a pleasure to see so many like fine actors at the top of their game, like all interacting. I mean, it's just and I think it blows everything out of the water. Ageism, homophobia, like, I think it's such an amazing show.
We are the oldest cast ever to be in a regular.
Well, there was Cocoon, series. Martin, don't.
Was that a series?
No, the movie.
Oh, the movie, that's right.
But he was younger than you when that was made.
But I think Jane, well, it's a known fact, she had a great birthday celebration just last month.
So right.
She's 80. I'm 77. I think Lily is 75.
Yeah.
And the youngest is just young upstart Sam Waterston.
This kid.
We all really think has a great future.
He's going to make it. I think he's going to make it.
He just stays focused and stops hanging out with the hellbent type, you know.
Let's talk about Ramon Antonio Gerardo Estevez.
Born.
So, but you know, it's interesting. As much as I know about you or think I know about you, you know, I get your whole, how, you know, where your Catholicism came from. So you're born in Dayton, Ohio, son of immigrant parents.
Yeah, both, from Spain. My father from Spain, my mother from Ireland,
Yeah. And so, obviously, there's this whole immigration debate, the shithole countries debate. Were your parents, were they Democrats? Were they politically active? I mean, I love that you had a union strike when you were 14. You organized a strike for the caddies at the golf club you were working at.
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was a very exclusive private country club, and the wages were very, very low. I started caddying at the age of 9 in 1949.
Wow.
It was one of the longest jobs I ever had. I had it up until I left home in 1959, so it was a pretty long gig.
You were one of 10 children, 9 boys, 1 girl.
Yeah, actually, my mother had 12 pregnancies. 10 survived. There were 9 boys, 1 girl. Yeah, I'm the 7th son besides.
Your mom passed away when you were 11.
Nearly 11, yeah.
And your family was able to stay together because of assistance from the church, so...
Well, the center of our lives was really the church and the school.
Right.
And my father, who was the anchor for all of us, you know, he was a very devout Catholic, but like your father, and you're revealing that he never talked about it. Yeah. He just did it.
My dad's father was a janitor.
Is that right?
Was your dad a union guy?
They didn't allow a union. He worked for the National Cash Register Company.
Okay.
And when he came, he didn't speak English. He spoke Spanish, Portuguese, because he was a Gallego from northern Spain in Galicia, so he was neighbored with Portugal, and there was a lot of inner action between the two countries. So both people dwelling near the border spoke each other's language fluently. When he came, he did not come to the United States. He couldn't get in. He came to Port of New York with his brother Alfonso when he was 16. They were denied entrance because there was a quota on Spaniards. Not Hispanics, but Spaniards, due to the Spanish-American War, which started the year my dad was born, 1898.
Boy,
what a time to get born.
Huh? Wow. Wait, there was still a quota when you got here, though?
Yes, there was a quota on Spaniards, not Hispanics. So the two of them got on the next boat for Havana. And my father spent 3 years in Cuba, and he came in to the United States as a Cubano through Miami, and then worked his way up to Philadelphia. He was naturalized a citizen in Philadelphia, and then eventually he got to Dayton, Ohio. He heard they were hiring over there in the factory, the National Cash Register Company, and that's where he went.
Martin, I've heard that your dad did not approve of your acting aspirations.
No, not at all. No.
Where did that come from, and where and when?
I kind of always knew. I don't have a conscious memory of ever not being an actor. I didn't know that's what you called it when I was a child. I started going to the movies with the gang, and gradually it dawned on me, you're like one of those people up on the screen. What's the problem?
Right.
It made perfect sense. And I knew that it was only a matter of time that I would find a way to begin this journey. And I also knew at a very, very young age that if I didn't do this thing, whatever this wonderful mystery that possessed me was, if I didn't follow it, if I didn't accept it, embrace it, I would never be happy.
Yeah.
And so it was a deeply personal thing, and I had to do it. My father didn't. My father was a very practical man. I mean, he worked hard all of his life. He struggled to raise a huge family in a foreign country. and as I say, his wife is also a foreigner. Both of them had relatives involved in civil wars in their country. My mother, the Irish Civil War in 1921, yeah. It was part of the reason she was sent to the United States. And he, in 1934, in Spain, you know, so their families back home were suffering through some very, very difficult times.
This immigration debate, and Trump's just awful.
Yeah, absolutely. He has no clue.
Rapist, shithole. Kelly, I mean, where do you start?
I think Kelly made it real clear today or yesterday in some interview he did, his chief of staff, who said that he didn't really understand the issue.
No.
Which was clear to all of us, you know. I wished he'd made that clear to the 800,000 young people who are, you know, sitting on pins and needles wondering if they're going to be deported sometime soon.
You've talked also famously about changing your name, you know.
Yeah. I never changed it officially.
No, I know, exactly. Yeah. But you were saying, but I mean, at that time, you dealt with, like, I'm not going to get a job, and you wouldn't probably
you
be
get
Martin
an apartment.
Sheen today if you were, right.
You couldn't.
But to have all this racism coming back, when I know you've said I regret that I changed it.
Yeah. But professionally,
you're like,
I should have kept it professionally.
Yeah.
And I begged Emilio not to change it, and he listened to me.
Yeah.
Charlie's another story, and I understood it. It's fine, you know. So he kind of got the best of both worlds.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, all right. So now here's the part where I'm going to feel like James Lipton. Martin Sheen, you've done Gandhi. Subject was Roses, Badlands, Gettysburg. I mean, it's hard to even start to even have a conversation about your... You've worked with Richard Attenborough, Francis Ford Coppola, Terrence Malick, David Cronenberg, Mike Nichols, Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg, Oliver Stone. I mean, just Apocalypse Now. Let's start with that, because you've had a career that's really, like, overwhelming. I mean, it's hard to even say, like, which director, or do you have a director or film that's favorite? I mean, you've...
Yeah, if I... You know, with all due respects to all of the gentlemen, and there are a couple of ladies in there, incidentally, that I'm fond of working with as well. But of all the people I've worked with, the one guy that really got me, and just his sheer joy was enviable, was Marty Scorsese.
Yeah,
I just did a part on. I came in as a replacement, actually, on the Departed. And I just came to adore this guy. He was filled with so much energy. I never worked with an actor who loved actors as much as he.
Yeah.
No one even came close. He truly loves what actors do.
Yeah.
Who they are, where they come from, what they stand for, and what they bring. And he never, ever once said after a take, let's do one more. He always said, let's do a few more. He gave them that freedom,
right?
You know,
right?
Everybody working. Right. I adored him, and I would answer his call in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, that is just an amazing. From again, Apocalypse Now to The West Wing to now Frank and Gracie, and there's so few people that have had your record of success, and
they haven't lived that long either. I mean, if you stay alive long enough, you're bound to get somewhere.
You're bound to get a
job. Even standing still.
Kids, you heard Uncle Martin. Let's talk a little bit about the Catholicism, though. When you were 11, you were saying your mom died. You faced the possibility of living in an orphanage or foster homes. The family was able to stay together with the assistance of Holy Trinity Catholic Church, raises a Catholic. You went to I did 12 years hard time as well.
I did too.
Sister Charles Bronson? Did you have her?
Oh, God, I had a ton of Sisters of Notre Dame. I adored them. And I take great offense to people, particularly lapsed Catholics, who criticize the nuns. From my point of view, they were the heroes of our life.
Yeah.
They came from
They still are.
Yeah, I adore them. They came from the same background we did. Their fathers were carpenters and bricklayers and plumbers and plasterers and truck drivers and gas station attendants.
Mm-hmm,
they knew where we came from, and they taught the fundamental necessity of the most important part of being human, and that is compassion.
Yeah,
in all things, you can be a front and center on any issue, but if you don't bring compassion, you've not brought the human element, the most important one. If you had to take all of the virtues away from our humanity, the last one to go would be compassion, because it is the thing that I'm convinced unites us. We try to act separate, Democrats from Republicans,
yeah.
You know, women from men, old and rich, black, all these divisions. But the central point is we're united. We just have to realize that.
Yeah.
We cannot separate ourselves from each other.
This is what's so interesting about you is that you really actually should run for something, because you actually are consistent. You talk about, you know, you said, I'm inclined against abortion of any life, but I'm equally against the death penalty or war. I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I'll not judge anybody else's right in that regard because I'm not a woman and I could never face the actual reality of it. Again, personal for you, because you've talked about that your wife was, you know, the product of rape, and you said you can imagine if she was not here. And so, but that's actually consistent and actually, I mean, I just, what I find about the Republican Party is they're so hypocritical.
Yeah. Yeah.
About their religion. They don't want to help the poor. They don't want to stay out of war. They don't want to do anything that Jesus talked about. Yeah. Jesus never even mentioned homosexuality.
No. And not only that, but I think that there is a difference between religion, and I'm kind of quoting it, and spirituality. And I think that is the central thing that divides us and unites us equally. Because you can belong to a religion, but it's usually organized, and it has a theology and revealed knowledge. Spirituality is something far deeper and far more mysterious.
Yeah.
Trying to discover who we are is the journey of discovering everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and in my own life, you know, I was raised Catholic. I left the practice of the faith when I was in my early 20s, you know. And, you know, when you're 21 and you start to have some success,
right.
Well, of course, you know it's all about you.
Right.
And the ego gets in the way. And it took me another 20 years to come back to it.
Yeah.
But I didn't come back to the idea of a faith. I came back to a spirituality.
Yeah,
I came back to the church of service, you know, through the Catholic Worker, through the peace movement, through Mother Teresa.
It's not just faith, it's works.
No,
and
it's
that's,
works.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what you do. I mean, I love one of the things you said, well, acting is what I do for a living, activism is what I do to stay alive.
Yes.
You're obviously outspoken or supportive of a million liberal causes.
What do you got?
But I love you said, need it, got it, need it, got it. But you said there's no way I could be president. The Democratic Party in Ohio wanted you to run for the Senate, and you said, I'm just not qualified. You're mistaking celebrity for credibility.
Yeah, it's like, true, yeah.
Seriously,
yeah,
can we rethink this now?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that you have to respond to a constituency,
right.
Whether you're in, you know, a local office or a county office or a state office, and certainly in a federal office,
right.
Whether you're in Congress or the White House. You respond to a constituency. You pay back, like, that's all reflected in this tax, whatever it was, that gave the rich more than they need and denied the poor even exist. And I think that that's what kept me out of a specific public service. I feel like a public servant.
You are.
But I could not respond to a specific constituency. I would have to respond to my own conscience.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of times I went against people who were very liberal and democratic on issues. One, you mentioned abortion, and I could not publicly support it.
Yeah.
Privately, I know of instances, and I could never, as you mentioned reading there, I could never judge a woman, and particularly a poor woman, or their circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, we watched this case recently of an undocumented young girl who was obviously raped coming into the country, and she was wanted to get an abortion, and they forced her to remain in custody and denied her, and finally, I'm proud to say the ACLU got involved, and
yeah.
she got her rights.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't actually, because you're so famous as President Bartlett on the West Wing, you played presidents four times, in Medusa's Child as John Kennedy in Kennedy, which you were fantastic, the miniseries, and as a future president in The Dead Zone. And I love that you said also, I adored Mr. Bill Clinton. He was a fan of the West Wing. For a while, we were given carte blanche at the White House, was ended when Bush got in, ended for me anyway. When the new administration got into power, all my West Wing colleagues were invited there to meet their counterparts, all except me. That makes me love you more than anything, that you were the only person.
Mind you, I found that out on the sly. I didn't discover that till after the fact, but it was kind of a badge of honor, you know?
He was amazing. Obviously, you're friends, but I got a chance to meet him at a Hillary fundraiser with Melissa Fitzgerald, yeah. who are my friend from West Wing. It was so, because he's that person, like you say, that you are the only person in the world when he's talking to you.
I saw
him do it with two people in front of me. Yeah. Like the guy said one thing. Oh, Mr. President, I knew somebody from Arkansas. Oh, you know that guy. I remember that guy. I knew the skateboard that I used to use when I was whatever. And then we got up and I was like, Mr. President, this is Melissa Fitzgerald, member from West Wing. He goes, oh, yeah. You know what? I remember they came to me for the West Wing and I was sitting to the, you know, the president wouldn't be doing all these things. Like he'd do this and this, but the president wouldn't do it all. Like, he just was like laser focused.
He came in to visit our set once, and he started rearranging the furniture. Said, oh, don't work that.
Wouldn't go like that.
Y'all should think about putting this on this side. You know, but y'all do a good job here and there. I adored him.
Yeah. Oh, good God.
I have to say, I don't know what went through his mind and his heart while he was trashed during the last few weeks of the campaign. When he became the focal point.
Oh, my God.
And I, you know, that last debate when Trump was wandering around the stage, and I almost wish that Mrs. Clinton had looked at him and said, can I help you? You know, he was so lost.
It's a dystopian nightmare of epic proportions. This is, I wasn't sure what to serve you because I was like, what wine goes with this dystopian nightmare currently ensconced in?
Well, no. I don't drink anymore. I drank up all mine.
You do drink at everybody else's too? Yeah, I go to airport bars and they're like 6 or 9 ounces. I'm like, why do you even have 6 ounces? Do you know who's president? I'm sorry. Yeah. I go against every fiber of your being, not just, you know, the roles you played, but the person you are in life. I mean, this is just everything that we teach our children not to be. Bullies, mean, racist,
vulgar,
sexist, homophobic. Yeah. Like, it's
just unforgiving, discompassionate, all these human things.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that sense, we need to, in a very strange way, be grateful to this guy and his crowd, because they remind us what's missing.
Yeah.
What's missing in them is a reflection of what we value most.
Yeah.
It's our humanity.
My friend Melissa wrote this about you in a text today, because I said, help! Help me, smart machine. So he's a great storyteller. He had a beautiful relationship with John Spencer, and we all love and respect him so much. He treated every single person on our set with kindness and respect, no matter what their job was. In fact, I think he made an extra effort with the background artists and those that don't normally get the respect they deserve. He taught all of us how to treat people. He's a special person, deeply good man, also brilliant, has a depth of breadth of knowledge that is nuts. I did a movie with him before West Wing. I had a small part called Monument. We joked that it was low budget, so we hoped Martin wouldn't protest and get arrested because the film didn't have the money to extend the shoot even one more time. That would be awkward.
Melissa, I love her. She's one of my heroes. I adore her.
Yeah, I went and we did the Stations of the Cross with you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she was, right, you know, because she loves you so much. She was crying, you know, about one station. And I was like, it's going to be okay. There's a happy ending where he rides. don't get sad about this station. This is Good Friday.
You should explain a little bit about this is not your normal Stations of the Cross.
Right.
The 14 stations which take the journey that Christ made from his kangaroo court hearing to his execution and burial. This Stations of the Cross is celebrated every Good Friday at 3 o'clock downtown Los Angeles. We start in front of the
yep.
Federal building, and it's organized and presented by the Los Angeles Catholic Worker. And I've been going there for many years. I've worked with the Worker in New York City, which was founded by Dorothy Day, the founder of the Catholic Worker. And so I was inclined to continue a relationship wherever I was, most major cities there are Catholic Workers. These are lay people that live in community. They don't take vows, but they live a gospel-motivated life. They feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and they protest why there are so many hungry, homeless, naked people. And why we live under such threat, why the money is wasted. And so these stations, as you recall, start in front of the municipalities, the government buildings. We call the government into question. You know, the very first station, Jesus is condemned to death, and we're standing in front of the federal building, and we're talking about how many people are in the bowels of this building for being undocumented.
Yeah.
They're condemned. And then we go on. We stop in front of the newspapers and all the various municipalities around downtown Los Angeles. At one point, they even stopped in front of the construction of the cathedral, Lady of the Angels, saying what a waste of money it was to build another church. I didn't always agree with some of their stoppage points, but I love that they are committed. They live on death row Skid Row. They serve on death row. They have a kitchen. And they live in community, and they take the gospel personally.
You did your son Emilio's film, The Way. You played a conservative father, and you once said, God forgive me for playing a conservative. So were your parents, I didn't catch that, were they Democrat? I mean, did they talk politics with you?
They lived it.
They lived it. Yeah, so you that's where, I mean, you learned it, because that's where you got the union strike when you were 14. Because, I mean, I come from a very different place, but I think you're right. It's like, it is amazing how I feel like we've all arrived at the same place.
Yeah.
That you just think, like, this is not my dad's America. It's not your dad's America.
Yeah. We can't separate
under
each other.
Donald Trump. It's just not. It's
Their power is predicated on separation, and our power is predicated on union.
Yeah.
You know?
Here's the other thing. I knew that we would fall in love the minute we met. Thank God Janet's not here. You memorize and can sing every single Frank Sinatra song. What station is on upstairs every day?
She plays Frank
Seriously
Sinatra.
Are you serious? On XM.
Really?
Serious
oh,
XM.
God, yeah, I don't have that radio in the car, but I love Sinatra. Yeah.
That's my station.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love him. I just love him.
You've also been in every one of my favorite movies, including American President. Which we play sound bites endlessly because it's so
right.
If Americans will listen to in the absence of true leadership, Americans will listen to anyone that steps up to a microphone.
That's
hello,
true. Yeah, they'll drink the sand. They're so thirsty.
The sand. Yeah. Where is that, Travis? Yeah.
I don't know how to work this thing.
Yeah. Again, that's Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, they they don't drink the sand because it's my friend Rob Reiner. Yeah. Duel with your name dropping.
Yeah.
but it literally is, right? Yeah. It's like they don't drink the sand, you know, because they're thirsty. They drink because they don't know the difference.
Yeah, they can't tell the difference. They'll settle for anything, anyone, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were fantastic in that movie as well. What, can you give us any spoiler alerts on Frank and Gracie, the debuts today?
Grace and Frankie?
Whatever.
That too. I
like to call it Martin Sam, but I'm...
Okay. gosh, I think our fourth season begins tomorrow.
Yes,
night.
Yeah. Yes? Well, when this drops tomorrow. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The 19th.
Yeah.
We start working again on the 12th.
Yeah.
And it will start our fifth year. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to publicly confess something that I...
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed of.
Yes.
But I've only seen two episodes.
So I can't tell you what happens.
I'm not sure what happens.
Unless you're in it? Okay.
I've read them all, mind you.
All right.
But I just find it so shocking to see myself. Yeah. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
I can't bear to look at myself. You know,
I went to the
premiere last season. You know, they had a red carpet and all, and they showed two epics in a theater. You know.
Yeah.
And oh my God, on the big screen with in a public place, I slid down in the seat. I said, oh my God, tell me when I'm off. No, I can hear me. I put my fingers in my ears. I cannot bear to look at myself.
Oh, thank God you're as insecure as all the rest of us.
There are some few episodes that I've still not seen on The West Wing. Then they were easier to look at because I colored my hair. And I was a whole lot younger, of course.
What are your, I mean, listen, this is an audience of liberal nerds, Martin. Everybody has, what is your favorite The West Wing episode? Because everybody has their favorite.
Oh, my. Without question, the veteran being buried at Arlington, who froze to death on the streets in Washington D.C., and they found Richard Schiff's card, and you know his character's card in his pocket, and they contacted him and said, "Do you know this guy?" And he turned out to be a Korean War veteran who died of exposure on the streets of Washington, D.C., and was buried.
My dad is buried in Arlington, and you also do work for Justice for Vets, our friend Melissa Fitzgerald's organization. So you really walk the walk.
That one really got to me. And that Richard went to the funeral. It was, and I was at the White House lighting the Christmas tree, and the boys' choir were singing.
In Excelsius Deo.
Deeply moving episode. Yeah. And it showed again the humanity of that office. What's possible.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. As a talk radio person, I love the Dr. Laura character.
God. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
I'm the president. And when we're in this office, we stand.
True for you.
And we are in this house, and Martin Sheen comes in, we stand and say thank you, sir, for your time and everything you do. Honestly, this has been the biggest honor we've had.
Oh,
I just, the honor of my life that I get to meet you and salute all your activism and amazing work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've had a good time here. I didn't realize it was going to be such fun
talking
about myself.
Exactly.
I appreciate it, and thank you so much, Stephanie.
Martin, thank you so much. And listen, your lovely wife sent more Trump Grab Me by the Country t-shirts, and I could not be happier about the whole thing.
Well, she's delighted. You were the most courageous person to wear them publicly.
Best day of my life. Martin Sheen, thank you for everything. President Bartlett. Let's just all imagine that President Bartlett's actually president. Happy hour, everybody. President Bartlett.
What's next?